name is Barry Allen. I am the fastest man alive.
RandomChatter.com presents a Flash podcast.
You see that red blur?
Dedicated to the discussion of the Flash television series.
A lot to discuss.
Scarlet Velocity.
Run, Barry, run!
Welcome to Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. Thanks for slowing down for a moment. I'm your host, Josh.
And my name is Abracadabra. Just when I think I'm going to get away, I hear the words that you always say.
I just want to dance. You make me want to dance. That's what your performance does to me. It might be the magic shoes that you put on me, too. They're making me want to dance. Well, hop regardless of my footwear, you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show, The Flash, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. So, my friend, Mr. Kadabra, or is that Master Kadabra?
Or just either way, yeah.
Yeah, Magician Kadabra. I'll just call you AK. That sounds like something HR would have said. Had he been here, but he wasn't there to come up with a bunch of ridiculous things to say until the very end. So
right, well, and I didn't realize it until the end. I was like, oh yeah, we haven't seen him all episode, have we?
No, that there could have been a lot of good one-liners there. Must have been his off contract week or something like that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
All right. Well, before we start talking about HR and the importance of him in this episode, and maybe a couple other things too, why don't you tell us a little bit about this week? And what we experienced.
Sure. Well, this was the 18th episode of season 3. The self-titled Abracadabra episode originally aired on March 28th, 2017.
That's just like him to name the show after himself.
He's
an attention hog, man. He is.
Yeah, one, he knows how it comes out, so.
That's true.
The story was by Andrew Kreisberg, with a teleplay this week by Brooke Roberts and David Cobb, and then directed by Nina Lopez Carrado. Hey, Joshy, watch me pull a rabbit out of this hat.
Again?
Nothing up my sleeves. Presto! Yeah, no doubt about it. I got to get another hat. So anyway, it was supposed to be a picture of Abracadabra, you know, the magician from the 64th century who
has appeared
in Central City stealing technology for mysterious purpose. Yeah, I'm not really good at this. I'm not as dexterous as some other people. Anyway.
I totally saw you put that under the table. So
anyway, Flash seems to have him, but Kadabra pulls a little misdirection. He says he knows Savitar's greatest secret, but just then Gypsy appears and tries to stop him too. But his hand, well, actually his entire arm, is quicker than the eye, and he manages to get away every time. He heats up. He can't cool down. He's got the Flash spinning round and round. Gypsy is furious and wants to take him back to her Earth to pay for killing her partner and her partner. But the team doesn't want to go anywhere until he reveals what he knows. Joe isn't just going to sit around and debate the ethics of it all. He's going to go get what he wants. Unfortunately, this allows the tricky wizard to get the last piece of tech he needs to escape, injuring Caitlin in the process. You should never also ever pull a giant steel bar out of you if it's piercing you like that. It's better to leave it in until you can like work on the wound, from what I understand.
So. Until you,
the more you know.
Didn't they do that? Didn't they wait until they worked on the wound and gave her a mirror and helped her out?
I thought they had pulled it out before that. It looked a lot bigger than it was. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That was very large. It was a scaffolding or something.
Anyway, luckily, Julian's there to do a little emergency surgery, preventing her from having to use Killer Frost abilities to heal. The team works together to stop the perplexing prestidigitator once and for all, showing that anything's possible in the world of magic. Barry hopes to appeal to the bad guy's sense of morals, but he should know that a magician never tells. So Gypsy takes him to meet his fate, and the team is back where they started until Barry comes up with a plan that must almost certainly work, at least within the next five episodes. Because, you know, time travel is always a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
But before he goes, he may have to deal with Killer Frost, who is now on the loose. Looks like next month or so is going to be busy for our heroes, but we would expect nothing less.
I would not. And I have to say I'm impressed about how smoothly and fluidly you pronounce prestidigitator.
Oh, well, thank you. I've been practicing my prestidigitation pronunciation.
Very successfully. Very nice.
Please.
All right. Well, before we talk about this magical episode, a couple of pieces of news that we wanted to share with you. The first one is kind of a aw shucks kind of news, because the Flash is off for a couple weeks here and will not return until April 25th.
Aw shucks.
Yeah, I see. That's what I said. So they're going to leave us hanging some more. We thought maybe they were going to reveal Savitar this week and then make us think about it and stew, but instead they're just going to make us continue to speculate who it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll talk about that a little bit more when we get into
definitely,
the episode.
Definitely, yes.
I got
we have
thoughts
a,
on that.
A nice little discussion about that. So, but either way, you and I will be back right after that episode, and we'll talk about what we find out with Barry's long hair. Also,
oh, yeah. I think that next episode is the one that HR is directing, the one directed by Tom Cavanaugh.
Oh, that's right, because that would be episode 19. I think you're right.
Yep. So that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Now I'm going to have to watch specifically for directing styles on that one. So, and see if that little selfie that he took shows up in the episode too. But
oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, another little piece of information that I would like to share with all of you guys is that Grant Gustin is actually going to be signing some autographs. So if you're interested, of course, you know, it costs money. They don't do it for free unless you happen to catch them just at the right moment as they're walking out of a 7-Eleven, I guess. But even then, I don't know if they would do that. But he's going to be signing autographs for Official Picks. So if you don't know, Official Picks is a company that you can get celebrity autographs on some very nicely printed photographs.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else you can kind of tell us about Grant Gustin's autographs here?
Well, it looks like there are six different photos in two different sizes. I think it'll cost you upwards of, I want to say it was like $180 for a single photo, and depending on the size that you get. But
there's 8 by 10 and then 11 by 14.
Okay.
Are the two
sizes. 11 by 14s are beautiful. If you've ever been to a previous Star Wars convention, Official Picks had the Star Wars license up until a couple years ago and were at all the celebrations. The quality of their prints are excellent. And,
yes, very nice.
And everything is guaranteed authentic. It comes with a seal of authenticity with it. And you can check out more at Official Picks, P-I-X. Picks with an X. So
yeah, and you know what? They're not cheap. You know, so autographs like this run a pretty penny. You know, but if that's something that you're really interested in, you have to kind of weigh the option of when is this going to happen again. You know, you may not have an opportunity to get Grant Gustin's autograph in any way. And for me, that's when it's usually worth it. And I've gotten quite a few autographs actually from Official Picks at conventions. And, I haven't been disappointed. I've always enjoyed. Now I would rather actually go and meet him if I had the opportunity, but I don't know when I would have the opportunity to do that. So,
but you look at it this way, if you go meet them, you're going to have to pay for, admission to the convention.
Yep.
You're probably going to have to travel. So there's travel costs and hotel fare plus the cost of the autograph on top of that. So,
and you're going to wait in a very long line.
Right, and you're going to wait in a long line. So, you know, you can send in for this stuff, and they ship it so it's all protected. So there's, you know, you don't have any kind of dings or damage or stuff like that. And with the bigger prints, I think they roll them in a tube and everything. It's, It's really cool. Now, like you said, I do like to meet celebrities. I don't really collect autographs myself. I mean, I'll get an autograph if the opportunity presents itself, but I'm not one to go spend a couple $100 on autographs, because I'd rather, like I said, meet them and just shake their hand, tell them how much I enjoy their work, maybe get a photo or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it is, I will say, because I have them hanging up in my basement here, you know, in my, or kind of like family area. When people come in, yeah, kind of like that, you know, but people, it's a nice conversation piece, you know, it's some cool stuff to talk about when I have guests over. So,
well, especially you get a lot of people to sign artwork that you drew of them or their character too. So
that's true. That's true. I have those too. So I have both. So I enjoy it. This is something that I would love to get. If you are interested, you can pre-order the autographs through Sunday, April 16th. So, you know, the deadline's coming up here pretty quick. Just like Jay said, go to officialpicks.com and you'll be able to find which ones you want and pick your photo. So,
cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start talking about Abracadabra.
Presto Change-o. That's his cousin.
Different family, though. That's why they have different last names, right?
Yeah, on his mother's side, I think so.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, I did want to kind of give a little bit of background of this character from the comics, because he's been around for quite a while, 1962, I want to say. I looked it up, and then I forgot to write down what it was. But it was in the early 60s, he was indeed a magician. that's how he was designed, you know, and he had the kind of magician tuxedo with the little mustache, and I think sometimes he had the little goatee beard kind of thing, and
like a Van Dyke, actually, I think is what it would be called.
Yeah,
it's got the mustache and the little triangular like beard comes off your tip of your chin,
right? And he was definitely from the 64th century, and he would use tech and stuff to perform what they said was magic. But in the comics, at least in the early on in the comics, he really wanted the attention. He wanted to be famous. That's why he was here. then he would do strange things to Flash, like turn him into a marionette puppet and use him in his performances. Which I was thank you very much for loaning me that copy of The Flash, because I read that before this week. It was very retro, bizarre, and awesome in just about every way. Just a classic Barry Allen with the 60s banter to Iris, too.
Well, and what I was reminded about with these is, like, they just kind of completed everything in one issue. It wasn't like tune in next month to find out how, you know, The Flash gets out of this.
Matter of fact, done. It was even a mini Kid Flash episode or whatever you call it, story at the end of the comic book in this one, too. So they had room for that and some ads about how you can get those muscles and send away for x-ray specs, too. So that was good.
Sweet.
So anyway, his name was Citizen Abra, was what they call him. And he didn't like 64th century because, you know, of course, nobody believed in magic. They had all this tech that could do all this stuff. So he came back in time and he messed with Barry. One thing that was, I thought, kind of interesting was that there was something in this episode that reminded me of one of his past stories. And that's where he was what was it? Something about, I think it had something to do with the guards.
When he put the guards in the water tank.
Yeah. Yeah, and he had this device that paralyzed the guards, and this one he kind of clashed with the guards right at the beginning and teleported them into the water tank. Which I'm not sure why they didn't just pull their guns out, or maybe he made their guns disappear. That's probably why. I didn't notice that. I just tried to look to see if they still had their guns in the tank, but
yeah, you know, I didn't even notice that. So I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay, so first of all, what did you think of this version of Abracadabra? Because he reminded me more of a kind of a sleazy Las Vegas magician more than your classic stage performer.
Yeah, He was an updated kind of magician. You know, he wasn't wearing like the tuxedo and tails and stuff like that. Had a goatee, but I thought the actor did a really good job. I may have mentioned this on the show before. The actor who played him was the Russian criminal assistant in Ant-Man that worked with Scott Lang's crew. Mm-hmm. Kurt is the character's name, but I thought he did a good job, and I don't know if that was a voice that he was choosing to use for Abracadabra, or if that's kind of his normal voice, but it was just an interesting speech pattern that he had for the character. It was a very, very tight, very precise dialogue that he had.
It reminded me of a stage voice, you know, like a magician would use.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And I thought David Desmalchin, I guess is how you say his name. Is that right? Desmalchin?
Sounds good. Mm-hmm.
I thought he really did a very good job of kind of characterizing a crazy magician. I mean, that's what I think he sounded like and even looked like with his frosted tips or whatever you would call the, you know, how they bleached his hair there. But, he didn't have the tuxedo, but he still had kind of that, outfit that you would expect to see in a magician who has to emphasize as he talks to really perform, you know? So I actually kind of dug it. It took me a little bit. It took me probably about half the episode to really get into it. But, I thought it worked with what they were trying to portray the character as. So,
yeah, I thought it might also just be kind of, maybe that's how, you know, we're talking what, like 43 centuries away or something like that. Maybe that's more how they talk in the future.
It could be. Everybody talks like that, huh?
Yeah.
No wonder he needed to come here. See, that would drive me crazy. all right, well, let's talk about it. So we got Abracadabra in here, and he will be popping up, and I'll hopefully try to use him to illustrate what I think they were trying to do in this episode. But we got to talk about the big, gigantic, you know, just about to disappear elephant in the room here, because there were so many people expecting for Savitar to be revealed. Now, I think it was last week you and I talked about how I think it might have been Kreisberg that was saying that the reason they have not revealed who Savitar is yet is on purpose. They're purposefully mm-hmm. waiting for very late in the season because of who it is.
Right. Well, I believe he put it like the reason we waited until now. So, you know, it made us think that, well, they didn't reveal it last week, so that means it's got to be coming next week, but now that I'm thinking about it, it probably was like whatever episode they were shooting, that's what he was talking about. So, you know, like it still could be two or three episodes away.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I started thinking about this. And the more I thought about it, the more I became okay with it. And I want to kind of share my thoughts. And I certainly am not trying to persuade anybody one way or the other. I just want to kind of share my thoughts with not knowing who Savitar is still.
Okay.
I you know, I've read a lot of stuff online, articles and you know, forum posts and comments and things like that. And I would say the majority of people are kind of frustrated that they have not yet revealed. But I got to kind of thinking, now you and I discussed that revealing it sooner would have given us the chance to, build on the character and have a little development with who this person is. So I thought, well, wait a minute. If this is somebody we know and possibly somebody on the team, we may not need a lot of character development for them. You know, we just might need an explanation of why they chose to become Savitar or why they're so angry with Barry we need that.
So it'll be one of those, why did you do this? And it's like, I did it because of you, Flash. One of those kind of things. It's like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I would hope it would be a little bit more complex than that. But I got to thinking, and I don't want to put my thoughts onto anybody else, but I said, well, wait a minute, why am I in such a hurry to know? I want to look at this as an overall storyline, a season-long storyline. And, you know, maybe that could have been done more effectively or more dramatically, maybe if it was shorter or something. I don't know. It's possible. But I became okay with that because I'm liking thinking about it each week, and I'm liking the little clues that they give each week. It's supposed to bring that sense of drama and suspense to the whole series, the whole storyline, right? And I think they've done that this season. Like you and I have said, it's clunky at sometimes, but I still keep tuning in to kind of find out, oh, who's it going to be this week and who's going to... Now, I discuss this with my family, you know, right after we watch it, because we watch it all together. My wife does not agree with me. She was not a fan of this episode. She didn't walk away feeling very fulfilled.
I can see that, and I was having similar discussions with some coworkers. I thought this was a little bit better than the, two ago, the Speed Force episode, just because I felt like Abracadabra was a really compelling character, regardless of whether he was a villain or anything like that. My whole thing about Savitar is just he's out and... You know, he's not doing anything right now. It's like he wasn't in last week's episode, and that's understandable from the way they did it. But he wasn't in this week's episode either, not even just to pop in and, you know, cause a little mayhem. It's like, you know, we know he's going to attack Iris here in May at the end of the season. And it's just like, you know, he's just kind of hanging out waiting for that to happen. And they've kind of made a big enough deal about who, like, if they never wanted to reveal who Savitar was, I think that's fine. You know, you could have a compelling villain and it could just be, you know, it could just be this bad guy. But now they've built it up and it's like, well, you know, all the villains have this reveal as, you know, that they are, you know, it's somebody that's going to shock the team. And they hold on to it so long that, you know, the fans, I feel like we dissect it 16 ways to Sunday, and it's like, you know, portion of the population is going to have guessed it correctly. And everybody else, you know, like we've gone through three or four different iterations of who we think it is for different reasons. So we've probably already given, you know, who it is. So once they reveal it, it's just going to be like back checking and, you know, okay, it just... It just works. But if you are building the story and you want to do a reveal, you know, if you do it a little bit sooner, it doesn't give people all this time to speculate or to figure out the flaws in your plan. It's like, you know, now we've, you know, I feel like I'm always having to look at things. Well, why isn't Savitar here? Like, what else is he doing? Is he figuring out how to kill Iris? You know, well, if he's from the future, he already knows he's going to do that. You know, I don't know. It's it just feels like there's a lot of stalling going on.
Sure. And I don't disagree with any of that.
Yeah.
I just looking at it overall as a season long story, I think it can work okay. The other thing that I was thinking about was how long have the characters been trying to actually figure out who it is? You know, obviously they were trying to stop him. And they didn't know why he was doing this, but I almost feel like they haven't been trying to figure out who he was until he actually got out of the breach, or got out of the Speed Force, I guess.
Right.
Just because Barry was trying to pull off the mask. He's like, who are you? Or something like that. And it seems like they've really only been trying to figure this out for a few weeks. And then after Abracadabra mentioned that was his greatest secret and that's the key to stopping him, then now they're kind of focusing on that as the characters.
Which you and I have been talking important.
Well, you and I've been talking about it. I mean, you know, think about it from their point of view. Does it matter who it is? You know, I mean, it's another villain. I mean, they fought countless villains that they didn't know ahead of time.
Right.
And now all of a sudden they're trying to figure out why he's doing this. And they're like, well, who is it? But whereas you and I are just, we've been talking about it all season because he had a mask. We're like, well, who is this guy? Why is he doing this? And we've been speculating. So, anyway, those were some of the thoughts I had.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, for them, it's just like, oh, here's another jerk from the future who wants to come and kill me, and he thinks he's the god of speed, and I need to learn how to get better to defeat him. And, oh, wait a second, maybe who he is important, because that's been pointed out to me now. So, yeah, maybe I should investigate that. But like you said, we've been talking about that for so much longer. So why does it take the show so long to catch up?
This is another example, and I think we talked about this. Oh gosh, it was either on Arrow or it was last season of Flash. Where if you binge watch this season,
yeah,
it's going to be a lot more, or a lot less frustration, I guess, trying to figure out who this is. You know, because it works as an overall story arc when you're watching it all together as a chunk like that. But anyway. You know, people can go either way. I'm curious to see what listeners think, and I know that there's been a lot of frustration going around, but I would kind of challenge you to speak your mind how you truly feel. And Jay, you know, I feel like you did that, but I don't think people should just kind of continue to go along and say, hey, well, you know, come on, when are they going to tell us? When are they going to tell us? Because that's what they hear other people say or hear online, that they're, you know, frustrated they haven't revealed it yet, or I am liking it more after I started kind of thinking about that. So,
well, as I, you know, look into this now, again, I was, you know, one of these people that thought that we were going to get a reveal, and I was disappointed by the end of the episode. The end did ramp up and presented us with some other, another piece of drama to kind of let us think about stuff over the 3 week break.
Yeah.
But now that we're down to only 5 episodes left, and next episode Barry's going into the future, and the last episode of the season is going to be, you know, the season finale with stuff, and so, you know, there's very little opportunity here for them to really do some meaningful stuff. So now I'm thinking, well, maybe they're not going to reveal his identity until maybe the second to last episode at the end, or maybe even the last episode. And he'll be the villain next season. Now, I know they said the villain next season is not a speedster, but if Barry finds out who Savitar is and it's someone that is not a speedster at this point, you know, before...
Oh yeah.
The future. Like I don't know how this is, you know, how it would all shake out, but it would be some like I think at one point we had said it was HR. So then, you know, it would be like HR would be the villain, but it's not really he doesn't even know he's the villain kind of thing. You know, maybe it's they are trying to change him or whatever. I don't know. I just think that they might do something interesting like that and bleed the villain over into the next season as a reveal in the season finale.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Somehow, I have a feeling that they're not going to use Savitar as a big villain, but he may pop up here and there, or the person that is Savitar. Heck, we got all these other shows he could pop up in, too. That's Legends of Tomorrow has been doing a really good job of using other shows' villains, and that show has become very fun. I really have been enjoying that, and I'm looking forward to the season finale. So,
yeah, that's that show's balls out crazy right now. It's kind of all over the place, and they're breaking their own rules next with the season finale. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how crazy they get.
Because they haven't broken the time rules in any other point in this series.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for every other week.
right. There was one other thing I just want to mention about Kadabra, because he gave some clue. Well, I thought there were more clues, but on my rewatch, I feel like he wasn't giving as much as I thought. But he does mention that Savitar, hallowed be his name, was the first speedster, which I thought was an interesting clue to give. You know, now they call him the god of speed, but 2 episodes ago we found out, you know, he bleeds, so he's, you know, he's probably a man underneath the suit, and he, you know, not really a god. He just calls himself a god. Now, the first speedster, the Flash, was the first speedster, as far as we know. My thought is kind of all timelines are all Earths kind of start with the Flash getting his powers. Now, I guess technically on Earth 2, it would be
Jay
Garrick. Yeah, or, well, Earth 3 in this case. I don't know. But for me, that kind of makes it a little bit more, plays into the theory of Barry Allen is actually Savitar.
Yeah.
Also, he says Barry defeats him, but after he kills Iris. So even in the 64th century where Abracadabra knows all about what's going on here, he knows some very, like, specific details for a dude that, you know, is from a super distant century and stuff
like
that. Yeah,
but remember, he also said at the end that Barry and he are foes.
Yeah,
and so he probably knows a lot about Barry because he's looked into it. You know, he's really researched Barry. So,
oh, that's probably true. Yeah. Well, and also, so this seems like this was the final episode for Abracadabra's journey. Like he would be, you know, he's going off to die. And the reason they probably become foes is because the next time Barry meets him, Barry will have a grudge on him, but he really won't know about it. And, you know, they're going to kind of, it'll be one of those things where it's Abracadabra meets Barry for the first time at the end of his life, even though he's been fighting the Flash the entire time, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
One of these weird ones living forward, ones living backwards kind of thing. So
do you think Gypsy's going to take him and he's going to be executed? You think he'll get away? I mean, we will never see any of that. But when we do see Abracadabra again, will it be a different version of him or he just has got away?
I think it'll be another version of him chronologically younger than the version we're seeing right now.
See, I would love to see this version. In the traditional sense of Abracadabra, just have him escaped from Gypsy's capture from wherever he's captured from her Earth, just because that would be very, magician-like of him.
And what is it with these people from the future who come back to the 21st century to visit and get stuck? I mean, Thawne got stuck. Abracadabra's gotten stuck. It's a problem.
Well, if an arrow shoots into your gas line, or you go back and you have to figure out some way to get 88 miles an hour, or there's a lot of different. Lightning has got to strike your time machine. It's just right. It's not as easy as you'd think to get back. You got to think of these things ahead of time.
That is true.
Fourth dimensionally. I want to talk a little bit about this ethical conundrum that they had to face in this.
Okay.
And because this was really the theme of the whole episode. And I think it also was one of the ways that they could develop or, show character development in our heroes and the team. And still not reveal Savitar, but it puts him in a place where he's taking another step as a hero. It's deciding whether to send this known criminal with Gypsy to what they believe will be his certain death, or letting him go, but getting the information they need to save one person.
So the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one?
Or the one. I think each one of them reacted in kind of a different way, but ultimately, it was Barry, it was Flash that made the heroic and difficult decision. But first of all, let's do Gypsy.
Okay.
She came back with a vengeance. I mean, you could tell that her personal vendetta was really interfering with her, I don't want to say her common sense or her sense of ethics or anything like that, because she was doing what she believed was right. I mean, she was following the law. She came to get this guy and she wanted to stop him. She definitely didn't want him to get out, but she was, I think her emotional status from being having her partner die was really, I don't know, it was interfering with what could have been a better discussion with her friends.
Definitely. No. I mean, she was definitely letting her emotions cloud her doing her job. Well, not do her job, but the interactions that she had with others, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just controlling your emotions a little bit and discussing it with them and telling them exactly why this is the right thing to do. But no, I mean, she was very, very serious about it. Well, then her interaction with Joe when he was trying to get the information from Abracadabra, that was a fantastic scene. And again, man, Jesse L. Martin just crushed it this week. He's really got to be one of the most positive aspects of this series. His acting in this, in whatever situation, it really just makes the scene a lot of times. Mm-hmm. We saw it with Grodd, and we've seen it with a lot of the things with Wally going on. And then this week, I love his whole lecture about his two vows that he took. One mm-hmm. was being a cop, and one was being a father. And that takes priority over everything else. And the way he expressed it. Now, granted, he shouldn't have turned around when Gypsy appeared, but still.
Hey, look over there. What? Yeah.
Misdirection. and who's to say? You know, Abracadabra might have gotten away anyway, but
right.
But still, you know, Joe had to take the chance. And that's something that you think about. Those things you think about when you're watching and putting yourself in those places. You know, what would you have done?
It was an interesting scene, but it was very telegraphed, with him. The scene I liked better that Jesse L. Martin did actually was his discussion with Iris at the end, where he's, you know, he's talking about how much he loved her and he just wants to, when she was a baby. Now, this also made him seem just a little insane. I worried about my kids, but I did not sit there and not sleep because I was worried they were going to start breathing. Now, I guess that does happen to people, but it was kind of intense for him to be putting this on her. But, you know, when he talked about how he just wants to make sure she keeps breathing, that was a really intense scene that he was going through there. So
it was good. I can relate. I mean, I'm guessing, you know, he didn't do that every night. Probably when he got back from a really hard case, you know, after a kid was hurt or somebody had been murdered, you know, he would come back and just worry about that. I think that's something that cops might do, you know, after experiencing all the hard times and the violence that they live through every day, you know. But I guess I don't live through that stuff, but I can still kind of relate to that. Well, yeah. And then, you know, you mentioned him talking to Iris, and she was making very brave decisions too. She knows or believes that she's gonna die, and yet she's still saying, hey, you've got to do what's right. I mean, we've got to make the heroic choice. She said the right choice, you know, but
right. Don't be like Oliver and get all dark and start killing people just because.
It's a very telling of that character, so much more than the first season. It's very telling of that character that she is willing to die, you know, willing to let her, it's not a sacrifice necessarily, but sacrifice her life in order for her friends and especially Barry to make the right decision and to do what's right. So I'm very glad that Iris has finally kind of developed into this person that Barry would truly be attracted to, not just in looks, but also in her personality and her beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, finally Barry just, Sisko kind of felt the same way too. He wasn't going to just, I get not the same way. Actually, he kind of wanted to consider, questioning Abracadabra, not giving him to Gypsy right away. But that's, it took precedence, his feelings toward Gypsy took precedence more over how they talked about his feelings about Abracadabra. But then homina, Barry, homina, man, homina. He's trying a little too hard. He needs to, I don't know. I think he has now.
Slow down. Yeah.
Barry finally, you know, in the end, he lets him go. He tries to come up with different solutions, and he tries to appeal to Abracadabra's sense of morals, which obviously aren't there. But you could tell when he was given his little speech that he knew that was a possibility, that he wasn't going to tell him. He was hopeful, but I mean, he wasn't desperate. I don't really think he believed he was going to say anything. So, he was still going to let Gypsy take him, and again, making the heroic, really, really difficult decision, I guess. Is that right? I mean, is that the heroic way to do it?
To let him go and not try to force. I mean,
it's hard, isn't it?
I mean, I just don't. I mean, I don't know if heroic's the right thing. It seems like it's the right thing to do. And I guess it is heroic. It's the thing that we want people to strive for, which, you know, a lot of people point to as, you know, being heroic. But I mean, you know, he would be standing in the way of another form of justice being served for a very selfish purpose. And, you know, it's kind of, Gypsy pointed out that there were a lot of people that died on Barry's Earth, but, nobody that they really know. I mean, not that that doesn't matter, but, you know, a lot of people on your Earth have been killed by him. So I'm trying to take him to justice, and you're, you know, getting in my way. But again, it just seems like it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it does. As I watch these, and I know this is partially for dramatic effect and partially just the limitations of writing for an hour long show each week and things like that. But I always feel like they don't consider enough options when they're trying to solve these things. You know, I would love for them
The characters, you mean?
The characters, yeah. I would love for the characters to try to come up with some other things. Well, let's just keep him here for a little while and let's see if we can figure something out. Or, you know what, how about let's inject him with some sodium pentothal.
What does he have to go right now?
Yeah, or how about this? And again, you could argue with how ethical this is, but hey, nobody dies this way. How about just lie to him? How about say, yes, we will let you go. Tell us now and we'll let you go. And then not let him go. I mean,
so just... given the morality that they have on the show, I feel like that would be akin, you know, that would be up there with killing him.
Well, you know, based on how they react anytime that someone lies to each other, I guess, yeah, they consider that a pretty serious crime. But to me, it's her life here. You're willing to let him go and die, or some of them are willing to let him escape and possibly kill other people. But I mean, we're talking about lying to a guy that has done some bad things to get information from him. So,
right. I mean, you could waterboard him too. I mean, it's really not that much more than lying.
Really? Waterboarding is not that much more than lying. You don't think so?
It's a couple more steps. I mean, there's such a small distinction between, you know, not telling the truth and pretending to drown somebody so that their body thinks that they're drowning and they give up the information. Yeah, but, you know, it's semantics, really.
Yeah, I guess so. So, and again, I understand from a writing point of view, but all right. So, well, let's kind of end with the Killer Frost here. I actually really enjoyed how they finally let Killer Frost come out. I'm anxious to see where this goes.
And she sublimated.
Sublimated. I had to look that one up.
I taught that to my son the other day. It's when a solid turns directly into a gas. It skips the aqueous state.
It's like, I was going to say it's like those videos you see like in Alaska where they throw, but that's not, that's water straight to a solid, isn't it?
Water straight to a gas.
Is it? No, I was talking about the videos when it's really super cold. Is that what that does?
Oh, I thought you meant when they take the hot water and they throw it up in the air, but you mean like pouring water onto a cold.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't matter. No, you're right. That was awesome. I mean, the whole idea of her getting it like that, I worry about them constantly doing surgery at Star Labs and never, you know, having real doctors there. But I was really enjoying the chemistry between Caitlin and Julian this week a lot more than I had expected to, because it hadn't really been doing much for me this whole season, but it mm-hmm. built up to what you saw this week. And after the desperate situation that they had to go through, and you know, Julian's true feelings to her kind of became revealed, and it really showed me a lot of things. Number one, it showed me that this is actually two characters that I believe a relationship could happen. It also told me that now Julian is almost for sure not going to survive the season.
yep.
but I did enjoy it, and I'm glad that they went there with those two characters, because it worked great. Now I think Julian is going to be the key to I don't know, doing whatever they're going to do with Killer Frost. I don't know
to if they'll solve ever bring her, right. Yeah, to fix her, because he's the meta expert, right? That was the whole point of kind of bringing him into the team.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think they're going back to Caitlin now. I think this is going to be who she is. She's just got to find a way to control her emotions.
Okay, so let me ask you this. And I know we've been kind of, you know, the characters have been talking about this and building it up, and Caitlin was always afraid if she let her powers take over that she would become someone she didn't like. But what makes someone who has powers, you know, instantly turn evil like this? This is not something we've seen ever, I guess.
I think you're right. I don't think we have seen it. But usually it's people that got the powers and then just, you know, succumb to temptation.
Or they were already jerks, like Weather Wizard, and they got powers and they became superpower jerks.
Yeah, that's right. So, but maybe there's something connected with her powers to the part of her brain that is, what do you call it when? Inhibitions, Reptilian? Right? Okay. No, where... No, where her inhibitions are not blocked or able to be controlled, you know, and especially the anger ones.
Possibly. I mean,
you know, like,
it,
you know,
I think it'll be interesting. Heart. It sounds like we'll probably get that Cisco Killer Frost battle that Vibe saw, I don't know, like first half of the season.
Right before break, I think, is when we saw that.
Yeah.
The winter break. Cool. Well, anyway, like I said, I liked that was a nice little thing to, at least give us a cliffhanger for on this little couple week break that we're going to have in April. So, go for it. I'm excited. Do something cool with Killer Frost. She's got to be on the loose for a little while so they can write a newspaper article about her.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, at the very end, HR comes back. He was having a good old time, I guess, somewhere.
Where was he? I mean, he starts to say something about like he was on a Rhonda. On a 2-day date or something like that. But really, where was he? That's very weird.
It is a little weird. And they made a point of, you know, saying that Cisco was a little worried about him. And so they could have just left that. B. So maybe it does have something to do with what's going to happen at the end.
Yeah. I don't know. I found that a little odd. So all sorts of weird little clues they keep leaving, and whether they're real or they're red herrings, we'll have to see here in the next few episodes.
I know that I do not have to spend a lot of money on HR for his birthday. I'm just going to get him a CC Jitters gift card and some lime jello. Those seem to be the two things that excite
combine
him the most.
You could do lime jello shooters and lime jello jitters. How about that? It's like coffee mixed with lime jello.
Like lime latte or something?
Yeah.
And one last thing. Kadabra mentioned something.
Yes.
He mentioned all of Barry's greatest foes. He mentioned
Thawne, Zoom, Savitar. Yes.
Yeah.
DeVoe.
Yes. So apparently Barry does not like the 80s band Belle Biv DeVoe. They got into some heated battles. Maybe it was like a, I don't know, one of those, like a dance off or something. Is that what you're thinking?
Yo, bro, dance off. I was thinking it was that he doesn't like Willem DeVoe.
Oh, that could be too. You know what?
That would be his biggest defoe.
You know what? A quick Google search revealed that neither one of us were right about that.
Okay.
It's actually Clifford DeVoe, who is also known as the Thinker.
I was going to go with the Big Red Dog. Okay, that's cool.
A Big Red Dog would be a good villain, actually. So we'll talk a little bit more about the Thinker as, I don't know, as time goes on. Could that be the big bad for next season?
It doesn't sound like he's a speedster, and it sounds like he's a pretty smart guy based on the name that he chose for himself, which like I was talking about, we need to have a smart villain. So
maybe he just likes to sit, you know, lean his head
like
on his
Rodan.
Chin or something. Yeah, yeah. But you know what? In the comics, it's somebody that gathered other bad guys, other villains together and used his thinking to get them to do a lot of stuff. So that sounds a little bit like a rogues gallery there.
Yeah.
So
very cool.
Be. All right. We'll keep looking at that. Well, a little bit of feedback I wanted to share. Jared sent something related to that. And he said, when Clifford DeVoe, the Thinker, was name dropped this week, I knew both about him. So I did some research. Oh, maybe he said I didn't know about him much. But anyway, he says, do you guys think he's a strong enough villain to be the big bad? Would they combine DeVoe's abilities with the other incarnations of the Thinker? Or could we possibly see a makeshift Injustice Society or secret society of supervillains thrown together to support him? As much as I'd like to see the Rogues Gallery be the Season 4 big bad, I wouldn't complain if they gave us Thinker either. Interested to hear your guys' thoughts. Thanks, Jared. Well, Jared, I appreciate that. What do you think about a Injustice Society?
I like those ideas. That might be a little bit big, but the even a Rogues Gallery led by the Thinker, you know, as someone now that Snart is gone, at least in this timeline, and probably wouldn't come back on the Flash in that capacity. Since he's gone, someone else to kind of lead the Rogues would be really cool there.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they could do a Rogues Gallery with non-traditional Rogue characters. They can even use a couple Rogues Gallery characters, but I think the Thinker would be great for that, for the same reasons that you said. So, the good possibility. And even if he's not the big bad, I think he'll be very prominent next season just because, hey, they threw his name out there. Why would they do that? Unless they wanted you and I to talk about him. So
clever.
And we had quite a few references this week. So I wanted to kind of go down this list and we'll just take turns again. You good with that?
Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
So one of the places that Abracadabra was robbing tech from was Stag Industries. And I don't know that that's the first time that they have mentioned it in here, but that is a place where Metamorpho, who is a character from the comics that can change into different
elements.
Yeah, I guess what I was going to say, elements. So his name is Rex Mason, but his superhero name was Metamorpho, and that's where he got his powers.
We also had a mainstay of the show, Cord Industries, which also was on Arrow this week, was another one of the laboratories that was broken into, owned by the Blue Beetle, Ted Cord.
Yeah, they got to work on their security.
Yes,
a lot of places were robbed this week. Mercury Labs, which we've heard before, that was also one of the places that was robbed.
And when they were talking about Mercury Labs, they mentioned that he pulled a David Copperfield, who is a famous magician.
Right. I think he's working in Las Vegas right now. Caitlin and Cisco mentioned the author Arthur C. Clarke, whose, quote, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah. Yeah. We both had to say that at the same time. That was the whole
I gotcha. Joke, and then I messed it up. See, I should have just
– Yeah.
You said prestidigitation way better than I said indistinguishable. and that worked very well on this. I like that they threw that in there.
And then when Julian got a cut, he said it was just a flesh wound. And rather than just leaving it at that, he actually said, as Monty Python chaps would say, which – I thought it was a little too much. I don't like when they kind of give away the reference like that, but maybe they didn't want just people thinking that he was that cavalier about it or something.
I thought it was just foreshadowing Caitlin's wound that she'll get later.
possibly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, then, of course, anytime they mention time travel, Cisco's got to mention Back to the Future, and so he mentioned Marty McFly this week.
Yes, and then Cecile's friend had extra Hamilton tickets for them sometime in July, which threw a little monkey wrench and everything. And now,
That was so sad. That was so – yeah, when are we going to go? July. Oh. Well, you got plans? Well, I'll be dead.
Oh, you know what? If she dies, she just has to rise up.
I think Barry should still take him either way because if she is dead, he could sell it for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm,
I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Well, I knew she was going to say Hamilton because there was a pause there, and I just go, she's got Hamilton tickets. and she did.
Nice. All right. Let's see. Kadabra, he said he's altered the terms of his agreement. So, you know, that was, I think, sounded like an Empire Strikes Back reference.
Yeah, it seems like an Empire Strikes Back reference, but I don't know. I mean, a lot of people can say stuff like that, but just to have the villain say that seemed
if it makes me think of Star Wars, it's a reference. So there you go.
And then what's this other one here you got at the end?
Oh, well, you know what? I tell you what, I had to go back and watch the preview for not next week, but next episode. And I liked watching it several times. I know we don't usually talk about the previews for the following episode, but you guys go check it out because Barry is donning a new super suit.
I wonder if it's the one we saw back in season one from the other Flash in the past.
It's slightly different. Dang. It's got some additions onto it besides just the white emblem. There's some other things on it too. So,
interesting.
We'll talk about it more next week, but you guys go check out the preview.
In four weeks. Three and a half or whatever. Yeah.
Next episode.
Next episode, right.
So I think we've crammed everything we can into this episode. There was a lot. But, when you got a magic hat, you can put a lot in there. So it works out just fine. All right. Well, so thank you for talking this week about Abracadabra. I know that's somebody that we've been looking forward to since the series began. And I think they pulled it off pretty well. I'd like to see even more of him because I think they could do a lot of really cool stuff with him.
Yeah. Well, if you guys enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave feedback for us on iTunes. You can also contact us via email at scarletvelocity@randomchatter.com. Hit us up on Twitter @scarletvelocity or check out the Facebook page and you can take part in the discussions going on there at facebook.com/scarletvelocitypodcast.
And you can check out our other shows, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is coming back. We're going to be back with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm excited about that, too. All of those, of course, are at randomchatter.com, and you can get them in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends. And remember, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for The Flash can be found at www.cwtv.com. The Flash and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.